You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.
We're bringing this Times Higher Education podcast to you from Waterflume at Bush Park Gardens theme park, just outside University of South Florida.
And brace and, for a sudden slowdown.
We've had a superb 2 days of conversation and debate, followed by some quite bumpy rides. So here we go. So, stepping off the log flume for a moment, this is John Gill, editor of Times Higher Education, and I'm here with Phil Beatty, editorial director for Global Rankings, and Tim Sawula, content manager for the Awards Summit series. And as I say, we've had a really fantastic couple of days. Topics under discussion tended to focus around the really distinct sort of vitality that exists within new universities, the sense that they're approaching global problems and challenges in a way that's quite distinct and quite different from older universities. And I mean, maybe if I just sort of kick off the reflections, one of my senses of this summit was that there's all the enthusiasm and energy that you always get at the Young Summit, but actually quite a lot of sense of opportunity there. I think President Judy Genschaft, the president of USF, was a very good embodiment of this idea that actually universities can do things quite differently when they're at the sort of newer end of the market. I mean, she gave an interview that I found interesting to our reporter John Morgan, and this is something that we've covered in THE this week. Really talking about how sort of newer universities very often are in the sort of metropolitan areas. She talked about Tampa itself, which we've all experienced as a really sort of dynamic, growing area. Sort of 3 million odd people living in the Tampa Bay area at the moment, but it's actually in I think it's the 23rd fastest growing metropolitan area in the US. And if you visit elsewhere in Florida, so John went, for example, to visit the University of Florida, which is an older, more venerable institution in Gainesville. But actually, Gainesville is not really where it's at anymore. It's kind of, you know, at certain times of the year, a bit of a mosquito-ridden swamp, versus the idea of Tampa being a very sort of up-and-coming area with, you know, industry, including data and tech and all those things that people get excited about. So her idea that newer universities being kind of metropolitan, growth-focused, focused on challenges and industry and new ideas was quite compelling, you know, tying it to the locations they tend to be in. But I suppose one of my questions, I don't know if either of you, Phil or Tim, have a sense of this, and I did ask it in one of the sessions I was chairing, was whether that narrative can kind of take over too much. You know, young universities can get carried away about the idea that they are fresh and new and energetic and all the rest of it. Because Andy Hamilton, the president of NYU, who's a former VC of Oxford, you know, did flag up in his session that although he buys that narrative as the president of relatively new institution, and certainly an institution that he said was new in the sense that it's only since the 1970s that NYU's really come, you know, found its the current identity. He did point out that actually all the older, venerable institutions that tend to be above these new universities in the rankings are also constantly reinventing themselves, constantly trying to do new things. So it's not only young universities that can sort of lay claim to this idea of being innovators and all the rest of it. I don't know if you got a sense of how rooted in real life that sort of narrative is.
I mean, I think there is an issue here that's about looking for what your advantages are, because obviously this group of universities first came to me, actually, when we conceived this idea of actually having a young ranking and a young summit. The idea was where we are at a disadvantage. We are not as rich, you know, we haven't necessarily had centuries of wealth accumulation, or at least, you know, many, many decades of building estates and accumulating wealth. We're not as prestigious, you know, we haven't got the buildings and the pomp and ceremony, though ironically now some of these great 60s buildings are becoming iconic in their own right, and they're all becoming, you know, listed buildings. So it almost is born from a sense of disadvantage in the terms of the big global race, and you look for what confers an advantage. And I do think there are legitimate advantages to being more focused, being a bit smaller, taking more risks. You know, you think about some of the structures in place at Oxford, where Andrew Hamilton had about 6 or 7 years of his career at the University of Oxford. You know, it is hard to get things done. They have literally medieval governance structures and self-governing communities, which are actually revered and have their own merits, but they're very, very difficult to make any quick and easy decisions. Yes, they get all sorts of advantages. So I think there is a sense of actually being able to take more risks, being a bit more dynamic. And it was telling, actually, that Andy Hamilton sort of almost pitched NYU, which is, you know, not far off 200 years old. He pitched it as a new university in the sense that it had this radical transformation. It sort of starting at the 70s, it was in the doldrums. It was a really failing. He described it as a being on the brink of the abyss. Financially, it ruined and in a right mess. And its renaissance came when it actually got rid of a absolutely stunning campus in the Bronx. You know, and it really, really was forced to focus on being an inner city Manhattan institution.
He also tied it, didn't he, that renaissance to the renaissance of New York City, which I suppose returns to that idea that President Genshaft had in Florida of newer universities being very tied to their location and the cities in which they lived, because New York was also, you know, if not bankrupt, close to it in the 70s and had the crime problems and all the rest of it. And I suppose that you've tracked that growth of New York City to becoming a world-class university with NYU. The flip side of that, of course, is that NYU, you know, all very well for Hamilton to claim that they're absolutely tied to their location and New York is vital to it and so on and so forth. But NYU has, of course, pitched itself in this evolution as the global university and has centres all over the world. So I don't know how you marry those two things up.
Well, I think there's definitely a sweet spot. I mean, for example, the top of our millennial ranking is PSL Paris. And, you know, Paris, France is clearly undergoing quite a resurgence on the world stage. It's got an extremely ambitious president that's really, you know, looking to employ all of their sort of soft power assets to really project France as a new hub and destination for young, ambitious people and you know, the finance that follows that. And so PSL, you know, is a new institution. It's top of our millennial ranking, but actually it's a amalgamation of, you know, some, I think it was six originally very old and prestigious institutions like École Normale Supérieure and they call it EMIN and things like that. So, you know, that's it. They can combine being in the hub of a, you know, a world city like Paris or New York, or, you know, an emerging.
I mean, I think that PSL is really interesting, isn't it? And Phil, let's see if you can justify this, not that it's your doing, but as the man who heads up the rankings, because I was sitting on a table as you launched the rankings in Florida with senior people from KAIST and from POSTECH in Korea. And they both sort of turned to me when PSL were announced at number one and said, well, you know, maybe KAIST and POSTECH should join up, join forces, claim we're a one-year-old university, and maybe we'll come top next year. What's your sense of that idea of universities reinventing themselves, perhaps with the rankings, if not at the front of their mind, certainly not far from it?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, isn't it, that Hong Kong UST was literally didn't exist at all until 1991. And POSTECH, I think, is late 80s, so they were actually built from scratch and they're only a few decades old. Whereas we look at things like the post-92s in Britain, for example, they were universities that existed, or they were institutions that existed well beyond that, but became universities. So we've tended to have a fairly consultative and fairly sort of cooperative approach that if a university is newly constituted and is seen as a new entity, we've tended to accept it as new, and you know, you've seen that in the 1970s reforms in France as well, and you've got a lot of massive challenges around how we consider new, and a lot of the focus on this ranking has been about, you know, literally institutions who've come from nowhere in a very short space of time. But I think actually one thing that struck me about the summit itself and the reaction to all these rankings, because we've, you know, we put out a golden age ranking, which was, you know, universities founded since 1945, the young, the under 50 ranking. We put out Generation X, Generation Y, Millennium. If there's one overarching message for me, it's actually, from the whole summit, is find and understand your niche. Because actually, if you think about it, universities like South Florida are of the city, but they're still these vast green campuses slightly outside. They're not downtown in the heart of everything. Hong Kong UST, 30 years old, sits on this incredible sort of hilltop overlooking Clearwater Bay in Hong Kong. It's isolated from downtown Hong Kong. Whereas, you know, we're in Queensland last year, QUT is literally in amongst the thick of downtown. So there's huge differences and variations around the physical infrastructure. You know, the UK 60s institutions, you know, you've got UEA in a, you know, concrete buildings, you know, well outside of Norwich. So I actually think if there's one message here, it's about finding a niche identity and a niche strength, and having the focus to be to choose what you're good at and stick to it. And that's what you see at POSTECH, for example. That's what you see at Hong Kong UST. That's what you can see from the reinvention of NYU.
Mm.
Find your assets, whether that is the fact you're in downtown Manhattan, or find your asset, whether that is that you've got a really, really great infrastructure of business investment R&D on your doorstep, like POSTECH with POSCO, the steel company. There is huge diversity in this list of young universities.
Mm. I suppose the other thing, maybe I'll direct this to you, Tim. You put together the sort of content and the themes and the discussions for these events, which does itself help to shape people's agendas, helps to shape the sort of way that young universities think about themselves. So quite a sort of influential job in itself, putting these programs together. And one of the things I noticed, you know, of course there's a lot of conversation about you know, the ways that universities plug into local economies and industries and all this stuff that new universities do brilliantly, access, you know, things we know that young universities excel at. You did also include on the program a really powerful keynote from Lynn Pascarella, who is head of the Association of American Colleges and Universities. And that was a much more philosophical discussion about the sort of point of universities. What are they there to do or represent? And she talked about, you know, attacks on democracy and so on and so forth. And really, you know, very, very strong warning about this idea that there's a sort of false dichotomy between liberal education and preparation for work, and the idea that things like the search for truth and public service have become, in some quarters, described as, you know, frills that can be done without, we can do without in higher education. I wonder if you've got any reflections on the importance of that kind of big picture appeal to the philosophical point of higher education for new universities in particular.
Yeah, I think that clearly we wanted to have a kind of a call to arms, as it were, with that kind of core grounding behind the summit and behind what we're doing. You know, obviously there's, in certain countries particularly, you'll have, you know, new universities set up as a, you know, particular policy response to, you know, a lack of, you know, qualified people in certain sectors, or a need to, you know, stimulate the economy in one way or another. And university, their success will be very much measured in those terms, and that's their clear mission. But, you know, universities or higher education now, I think, is becoming so internationalised and is such a global sector that you know, there needs to be some reminder, perhaps, in particular these kind of global summits where we've got 41, you know, different countries being represented, that there is perhaps another purpose to universities, to higher education, and that shouldn't and mustn't be forgotten. At a summit like this, where, you know, we've got that, you know, greater focus on obviously the different metrics of assessing university performance and, you know, what they're there for and how they might compete against their older, more established peers. I think that, you know, for me, actually, the takeaway from the summit is that, you know, nobody was introducing themselves and asking, you know, what year their institution was founded. You know, the actual date is kind of not really so important with young universities, perhaps, but it is very much a mentality rather than the reality of their constituents that does seem to bind people together. And that kind of mentality that we're a young university and that we're able to do things in a more agile way, as President Ken Scharf was very keen to emphasise, and to be, you know, very much sort of part of the city and part of a town's growth and really feel embedded within that. That's what kind of stood out. And I think that, I mean, we actually hosted on the first day, we had a workshop specifically for younger universities, looking at alliances of younger universities and how they can potentially work together, with a view that there might be an opportunity for an American alliance of younger universities across Canada, USA and Mexico. And it was chaired by Anthony Forster, the Vice-Chancellor from the University of Essex, and Juan Romo, the President from Carlos III in Madrid, and Rene Hindmarsh is the Executive Director from the Australian Technological Universities Network. So there's a real global outlook there. But we polled about 100 different participants who came into the room, and over 90 quite intense minutes they came up with, you know, sort of three big ideas that they could try and take forward. One of them around faculty exchange, I've noted these down. One, the most popular idea out of the whole room, which is to create a scheme where a new network could potentially guide or co-guide PhD students around student learning. By far and away the most popular proposal was that students can become partners to academic faculty, co-editing, co-designing, co-authoring publications. And around university and industry partnerships, the most popular idea was that networks can come together to mitigate risk in terms of their investments when having institutions coming together and presenting particular funds for certain types of research. That kind of energy hasn't occurred at any of our previous summits. You know, our host partners for all their great ideas haven't wanted to try and put that kind of workshop together. And so to have that kind of tangible outcome from the summit, as well as having the sort of rallying call to arms from Adin Pascarella, I think, you know, is a really good way to summarise the 3 days.
Absolutely. And talking of energy, we've been in a bit of a backwater here for the last 10 minutes. Great to have had that conversation, but I can see some rapids coming around the corner, so we better hold tight and leave it there. Well, that's all we have time for on this THE podcast. We leave you from the Congo River Rapids here at Bush Park Gardens. The alligators are snapping, the white water splashing, and I'm going to put this microphone away before it's taken from me.
You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.